Richard.
Now, from the Star Rental Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All righty, boys and girls, headlines on a beautiful Thursday night just outside T-Mobile Park right here on Softy and Dick. Headlines, of course, are brought to you by our friends at VenueKings.com.
Suck the Kraken's tentacle.
Need tickets for the game tonight? VenueKings.com. Gate in the door for under 80 bucks. The lineup, the first lineup of the year is out. Leadoff, Mitch Haniger, followed by Ty France hitting second. Kyle Seager at third, hitting third. Evan White hitting cleanup. Taylor Trammell making his Major League debut. Hitting fifth, followed by Dylan Moore, Jake Fraley, Tom Murphy behind the plate after missing the entire 2020 season, J.P. Crawford hitting ninth, and Marco
Gonzalez
on the mound tonight against Kevin Gossman for the Giants.
Lots and lots and lots of college basketball news. Hall of Fame North Carolina coach Roy Williams announcing his retirement after 33 years at Kansas and UNC. Chris Beard moving from Texas Tech to Texas after Shaka Smart left for Marquette, and OSU All-American Cade Cunningham entering the NBA draft. He's projected to go number one.
That was a good read by you, but you know what I want next time out of you?
More than anything, I want better execution.
There you go.
Are we clear on that? I want better
yes,
execution.
Coach.
Baseball, we got some finals. The Doyers have gone down 8-5 to Colorado. Rockies get their first win of the year. Final and 10 from New York, from the Bronx. The Blue Jays take care of the Yankees 3-2. Top of the eighth in Kansas City. Rangers and Royals were tied at 5 after the first inning. Kansas City leading Texas 13-9. Top of the eighth. Tigers take out the Indians 3-2. And the Brewers get by the Twins in 10, 6-5.
Cardinals have restructured the contract of center Rodney Hudson, saving about $7 million in cap space. Hey, it's the 5 o'clock hour, Dave. You know what that means?
Oh, baby, you know.
That means we're sponsored by West Coast Men's Health. Perform the way you used to. Call them right now. Here's the number, 206-312-7008. You can also check them out online at westcoastmenshealth.com.
Okay, so can we go ahead and just recap the last segment to make sure that we all know you would do what Robbie Cano would do. To get the $300 million.
I don't think I even would do that. But I would definitely not do the...
Well, you said Bernie Madoff off the air.
Tear everybody else.
I was never asking you about Bernie Madoff. You did?
Well, yeah, I said it on already.
I would never ask you, would you take $300 million to have your kid kill himself, go to prison for the rest of your life, and force your ex-clients to jump off a bridge? That's not what I'm talking about.
Well, see, when you went to the lose your job, lose your reputation, I kind of went away from baseball when you said that. I went into just like the business world.
You have
into
a wild imagination.
World. Well, why? He didn't lose his job.
Wild.
He didn't lose his job, so I thought
suspended.
You were talking about something else.
Right. He's suspended for the rest of the year. For right now, he's not working. I mean, he'll come back eventually, but he's definitely lost his rep in baseball. There's no question about that. But I think, like we were talking off the air about this this whole thing, he has set his family up forever. His kids will never have to worry about anything.
Generational wealth.
I think from that perspective, he would totally do it again. You think Gerald Everett would do the same thing for $300 million? If you would. You know, that's a great question. Next time we talk to a Seahawk player, hey, man, Robbie Cano got suspended for the second time in his career, but he made $500 million. Would you do the same thing to get that kind of cash? No, I would never ask that question. Well, maybe I would. Maybe Joe Fan would next time. He's the ball buster. Anyway, Gerald Everett, as we get away from baseball for a quick second, the new Seahawk tight end, spoke today. Had a chance to meet with the media. Gerald Everett, who both of us are expecting big things from, obviously, starting with his potential, what it could be with the Seahawks, and everything Gerald Everett brings to the Seahawk franchise. Check it out.
You know, I don't like to really just look at myself solely as a tight end, but, you know, to date, no, I don't think that I've really eclipsed or reached my peak, and I definitely think that, you know, Russell in Seattle can assist me in doing so, and along with Pete and Shane, and as Shane has been doing, but I definitely think I can take the next step in Seattle.
What is that next step? Like, what does that look like for you?
Well, we don't know. I don't know. You know, just I'm able to do a lot of things within a team, within an offense, and a football team, on the football field. So, you know, I surprise myself every season. You know, I'm allowed to do more and more things each year that I've been in the league, whether that be jet sweeps or screens or running the ball or, you know, anything. So, you know, I really don't know what that looks like, me taking the next step, because I really don't think I have a ceiling, honestly.
You were just talking about the influence Shane's had on you since you came into the league. When he was hired by the Seahawks in late January, did you already have an idea that maybe this is where you were wanting to play, getting set to become a free agent, or was that something that developed closer to free agency?
Well, when Shane first went to Seattle, I mean, you know, obviously, you know, the idea was always there. It lingered in my head, but also, you know, you have to understand it's a business. And, you know, Shane has definitely been pivotal in my career and definitely been a mentor and a coach. And, you know, he's definitely just shown me the ropes. And, of course, you know, we've had that tight-knit relationship since I've got in, and still remains, obviously. And, yes, he was a factor in my decision coming to Seattle. But also, you know, Seattle having a great organization and a winning culture and great players like Russ, DK, and, you know, Bobby Wagner and a bunch of other guys. But just to pinpoint one reason would have to be, if I had to pick one, it would be Shane, for sure.
What do you expect out of a Shane Waldron offense when he's calling the shots, when he's running it? How different do you expect it to look from what you've done under Sean down in L.A.? How much do you think he'll bring over? What do you think he'll throw in to change it up a little bit? What's Seattle getting in an offensive coordinator in Shane?
Well, they're getting a mastermind, you know, similar to McVay. You know, I think McVay and Shane put their heads together, and you had the magic that we were able to whip up in Los Angeles. But having Shane in Seattle now, you know, it's definitely, we're able to see really what he can do isolated away from the group and just, you know, give him a new set of pieces and just see how he uses them. But, you know, the fans and the 12 have to see, you know, just how it all plays out.
I'll keep it simple. What's the best part of your game?
Well, I would have to say the best part of my game would have to be the element of surprise, because, I mean, I can be a receiver, I can be a tight end, I can run the ball, I can pass pro, I can take the top off of defense, you know, and Seattle already has all those things in the offense, and I feel like I can only add more and be more of a addition to it.
I remember watching that game in that stadium right there in 2019 when Gerald Everett came in with 7 catches for 136. And I was like, why isn't this guy being used more? He is a freak show at tight end, and he has never gotten the opportunity because they've always had another tight end there. He is going to get his opportunity, and I wouldn't be at all surprised at the end of the 2021 year, we're talking about Gerald Everett being by far the best acquisition, trade, draft, or free agent signing that the Seahawks made this
year.
Well,
first of all, God bless Curtis Crabtree. I always love hearing Curtis on those Zoom calls because he's always the guy getting serious. Gerald, how many two tight end looks did you have in L.A., and what do you make of the two high safety looks you saw in this division last year? I love Curtis. Good for him. At number two, this guy's 240 pounds, and he ran a 4.640 at the combine, man. He can scoot. I mean, he is an athlete. He's the exact opposite of me. He is a freaking athlete.
He's a second-round pick.
I think he's going to be the third leading target for the Seahawks, and the only concern I've got about these pass catchers is, God forbid, if somebody gets hurt. As much money as they're paying Tyler Lockett right now, do they have enough cash left over to go out and get a real bona fide third option at wide receiver? They may have to find that guy in the draft. That guy may be another kind of chance project. Like, is there another Josh Gordon out there that's floating around that, you know, nobody wants because the guy's got a checkered pass and they can maybe bring him in here and see if he can pop in 2021. But they got to find a third option because right now it's obvious who their three guys are, and there's a huge drop-off after those guys to the rest of the team.
I've been begging for years. Give me that tiny little guy. Give me that 5'8" jitterbug that can be a kick returner, a punt returner, a third wide receiver. Hell, you can put him in the backfield occasionally and run some cool stuff, put him in motion, run reverses. The Seahawks have not had that guy in years, and I didn't even think the last time the Seahawks had a guy like that. And those are the type of guys, because they're only 5'8" you don't have to use a second-round pick on him.
Yeah, you want a Cooper Kupp type of guy is who you want.
Even more
just
twitchy.
Just go to Eastern and find some white guy out of Montana.
No, I want even more of
here.
A twitchy guy.
That's
I want
guy
more of
want.
An explosive twitchy guy.
Well, who's the guy that we had, the running back that went to the Lions? What the hell was his name? The old Swiss Army Knife guy.
Oh, J.D. McKissick. Yeah.
That's somebody
like that, a jack-of-all-trades guy, but even a guy that's maybe a little more explosive than J.D. McKissick.
Well, I think John Schneider needs to get off his ass and go find that kind of guy because they absolutely need it for sure.
So it's kind of a fun challenge now. We love it.
It might be too big of a challenge with those three guys. They got to find some depth, and you're doing it talking about finding depth without a lot of money and talking about finding depth with three draft picks. But again, you know, it's just, you've learned one thing about this front office, and that's don't start making decisions and judging what the roster looks like on it in April.
Right.
Because it's a boatload's going to change between now and then. It always does. All right, we'll get a break. James Paxton, the Big Maple. Does he like the nickname Big Maple? You like the nickname, the Big Maple?
Yeah, it's pretty good.
Big Maple,
it's not
intimidating
bad.
To you?
It's not,
big,
not big intimidating,
Maple?
But he's not an really intimidating pitcher.
Yeah, well, his stuff is intimidating.
His stuff is intimidating, yes.
That's what he needs. That's what James Paxton needs. to take his game to the next level, to match his repertoire of pitches, he needs to get a mean look.
He needs to watch those old Randy Johnson videos and learn how to scream and pound his fist into his glove as he marches off the mound after a strikeout.
Well, why not just kill a bird, right?
And
just
do that. Too, yeah.
Or, you know, put like a mouth guard in with like metal jaws inside of it. You know, something like, you know, back in the day, Moonraker, the old James Bond. He needs something, man. He needs to get a tattoo on his face, like Mike Tyson. Something to match his fastball. We're going to hear from the Big Maple next on Softball in One App.
Now, back to Jimmy's on First for our opening day broadcast. It's Softy and Dick on Seattle Sports Radio 950, KJR.
Guy, what do you think of when you hear this theme? Huh? Devin Mitchell.
Oh, yeah.
Bill Bradley.
I don't think it goes back that far, does it?
I think this goes back to early 80s. I think they were using this for a long time. I'd be curious to get Kevin Martinez's take on that, but I think this is a good theme, though. Mid-80s, early 90s. Are you a Lefevre believer? That's what I think of when I hear this song. A couple texts. James Paxton's going to join us in a matter of minutes. The Big Maple coming up in 3 minutes, as a matter of fact, on the radio show. 49451. All we want to know is James going to have an eagle land on him this year.
Well, that's amazing.
You know, that's a hell of an idea. Before every start, like the guy that does the bird for the Seahawks.
Yeah, right? The trained bird.
They can control that thing with like radio waves or West Coast Men's Health waves or whatever.
The acoustic waves?
I think the same thing they put in your schmeckle. They're putting in that bird and getting him to come back. Maybe before every start, we have an eagle land on his head. And the minute the eagle takes off, we're good to go. First pitch. Let's see. Gonzaga's run from the 425. Gonzaga's run has created a ton of tension between Softy and Dick. A ton. And I disagree. There's always been tension.
Yeah. It's just exacerbated the tension.
I've hated your guts for years, and now it's just coming out. Let's see. 206, Dick is a moron. 425, Softy sucks. Go Zags. 360, Serena Williams never failed a drug test. She ran from one but never failed. What does that mean? I have no idea. Is there a backstory behind that?
Were we talking about Serena earlier?
I don't know. Let's see. I change the station whenever the new Cars for Kids ad comes on. Says the 206. I can't stand it. It's getting old. The song is a crime against humanity. Says the 206.
We got some creative ones today.
Let's see. Let's get a couple more before we get to James. 20 years later, we're back in the playoffs this year. Go M's. Wow. Says Selena.
Wouldn't that be something?
Like the optimism. I bet the over 72.5 and to make the playoffs because I'm guaranteeing 90 wins, baby.
Wow.
There you go. To make this radio show better once a week, you should have Boone on. I agree. I think he's awesome on the air. Mather made the Mariners relevant again. Well, I guess he's true. People were talking about it. Right?
The first time Ken Rosenthal ever wrote an article about the Mariners in like 20 years.
If that's what you're looking for, then he absolutely made him relevant. Replay Edgar's double. God dang Booney is damn funny. What exactly is at stake this season for the M's? I feel like no matter what happens, DePoto and Service are going to be back next year no matter what happens this year.
That's true.
All right, joining us on the radio show right now, a guy who is going to make his first start in Game 5 against the White Sox. He's back after spending the last couple years in that cesspool called New York City in the Bronx with the Yankees. The Big Maple, James Paxton, has returned. James, how are you, pal? What's going on?
I'm doing great. Happy to be back in Seattle. How are you guys?
We are great. It is great to hear your voice. Great to have you back in Seattle in the 206 where you belong. But let's just start off and talk about that. Why are we talking to James Paxton right now as a member of the Mariners rotation and not the Yankee rotation? What happened?
It just worked out that way. You know, this was kind of a crazy offseason with you know, not knowing how much of the season was, or last year, you know, with the revenue stuff and everything, people weren't really out. It wasn't a normal free agency. But the Mariners reached out, and they were interested, and it just happened to work out, and I love being in Seattle. And, it's been great.
What was it like being a Yankee and living in that city, especially since you're, you know, kind of a laid-back, small-town guy from British Columbia?
Yeah, it was different for sure. I loved playing for the Yankees. They were great, you know, great teammates, great staff over there. The fans were awesome. Really enjoyed it. that being said, you know, Seattle is definitely my kind of place, and I love it here.
You know, I'm looking back at your numbers that you had in 2019. I kind of, in some ways, tend to maybe throw 2020 out the window. But in 2019, James, you're 15-6 with a 3.82 ERA, and you started 29 games. And I'm trying to rack my brain on why the Yankees did not bring you back. And I guess the standard answer would be, well, ask them, right? That's their decision. But do you have any insight, any thoughts at all on why you did not go back to New York after what I thought you had was a great year in 2019?
Well, I think there's a lot of question marks on me after the 2020 season. I don't know if people thought that maybe I wasn't going to get it back, you know, thought that maybe the back surgery and everything that happened there, just I wasn't going to be able to come back from it. So there was a lot of uncertainty. But I was always confident in myself, and I thought that I could get back to my 2019 form, and I feel like that's where I am now.
Yeah, you hit 97 this week. I mean, are you throwing as hard and as well as ever?
Yeah. This is probably my best spring training ever. Wow. Threw the ball really well. Felt really good about it. Feel good about where my breaking stuff is. You know, fastball felt really good. And, you know, I think that once the real games start and I get the fans in the stands and the lights are on and everything, I might get a couple more miles an hour out there. But, yeah, everything's been feeling really good.
James Paxton again with us. That back surgery that you referenced, that was February, I believe, of last year before the 2020 season started. What was that like to go through? What was that all about?
It was tough. You know, I got so my back started bothering me right before the postseason of 2019. And I pitched through it in the postseason 2019. And then we were trying to figure out what was going on that next off season. And we couldn't figure it out. Finally found out that there was a cyst in my S1 joint in my back, and we had to go in and take it out. And it just took a long time to, it was a very, very like minor surgery really, but just coming back from something like that just took me some time, took some time to get the strength back. And, you know, I feel like I'm back to 100% now.
So you never had the worries that, man, this could end it. I mean, this could just end my career. I may never be the James Paxton before. You always felt confident that, hey, this is just a bump in the road?
Well, you know, 2020 was concerning for me, you know, because I felt like I was back to being normal before the 2020 season. But I just didn't know. I didn't realize how weak I was and how like the lack of mobility that I had in my back compared to what I had before. And I really can see it when I watch video of me pitching in 2020. It just looks completely different. It doesn't look like myself. Mm. So I really had to go to work this off season and kind of start from scratch and work on my mechanics and get everything back to where I wanted to get it to.
Well, James Paxton, again, the Big Maple, back with us on the radio show, back in the Mariner rotation. We want to talk about, you know, this club and what we'll see starting tonight against the Giants. But you mentioned the buzzword there, man, which is the postseason. We haven't had that in 20 years here in Seattle, and hoping you and this young group can get us back there. But just talk about what that 2019 appearance was like for you. You know, Game 5, ALCS, you beat the Astros, 6 innings, 9 Ks in that game against Houston, pitching in the playoffs at Yankee Stadium. What was that experience like for you, and how much of that experience you think can even help you now?
Oh man, it was the coolest thing ever. You know, my first game was in the postseason was against the Twins.
Yeah.
And I was just shaking. I was so nervous, you know, so excited, like my whole body was just buzzing. I couldn't feel the ball in my hand. And I was just throwing. I had no idea what was going on, but got through it. And each start just got better. You know, I got more feel, felt better about it. And then by the time that third one came around, I was just, you know, it was amped up, and I was pitching again, and I was throwing the ball the way I wanted to throw it. And you know, just really learned a lot about myself, and just getting that experience was huge. And I think that it's really going to help me the next time I get back to the postseason. I'm hoping I can do it here in Seattle.
Well, James, Softy just mentioned that, you know, playoffs is a word that has not been our vocabulary for 2 decades. And, you know, the management's been very conservative about talking about winning expectations for this year. Does that kind of bother you, especially since you're coming from a franchise who just throws the word playoffs out like it's a, you know, like it's a birthright every season?
Yeah, you know, I think that you know, the Mariners don't want to put too much pressure on these young guys. They just want these young guys to go out there and continue to develop and get better. And I think this is a group that can get to the postseason, possibly this year, but in the future for sure. You know, I think that we're building towards that. And then the next, you know, maybe this year, the next 3-4 years after that, like, we're going to have a real chance to do something cool. And we've got some great talent, great leadership, really good culture right now in the locker room. I think it's going to be a really fun team to watch this year.
Has anything changed? I mean, it's not like it's been 10 years, right? You know, I when you left, you had the same manager, the same GM, all that stuff. A lot of new faces, I guess, in the clubhouse as far as young guys, but, you know, what has really changed in your mind in the 3 years you've been gone?
You know, I think just the development of the leadership of Marco Gonzalez. You know, he's awesome. He really does a great job with his team. Kyle Seager's been fantastic with the positional players. I can really see that. And, you know, Mitch Haniger is great with the outfield guys and everything. I can just really feel the cohesiveness of this team and how everyone is really pulling for each other and helping each other out. And that's what it takes to be a special team.
You mentioned Mitch there. I mean, you saw his breakout season in 2018. Does he look the same to you as he did then? Because we really haven't seen much of him since you saw him last.
Yeah, you know, he looks great. He looks like himself again. He's walking around like himself. He's got that confidence. I think his body's back to where he wants it to be. He's really strong, and I'm really looking to see a good season from him this year.
Well, I'm looking at your deal. You're on a one-year deal, and a lot of the guys, James, like to call those prove-it deals for whatever reason. But, I mean, look, you've been around the game a long time. I'm not sure how much you have to prove. You're 32, but you'll be 33 in November. Do you kind of approach this year maybe from that perspective that, hey, I'm looking to show that I'm healthy, looking to show that I'm back, and maybe try and cash in on one more long-term deal before I walk out of baseball?
Yeah, you know, I think for me, it's just kind of showing people that I'm back to being myself. You know, that 2020 was basically not me out there, and that I'm back to my, you know, 2019 version of myself, and that I haven't lost it, and I've still got a lot left in the tank, and you know, that's the goal for me this year, to go out there and pitch and just do my thing.
You mentioned pitching in the playoffs and how nervous you were and packed ballpark and everything. What was it like pitching last year? I mean, I know you only threw, you know, you only started 5 games, but what was it like walking out on the mound with absolutely nobody in the stands?
It was weird. It was very weird. You know, I feel like fans make sports. Without fans, it's just not the same. We really had to create our own energy out there, and it was very, very challenging, I think, for everybody, just to create that intensity, because normally, you know, you have the fans screaming, you got that kind of energy in the stadium, and it really gets you going. And I know that everyone really missed it. So we can't wait to have fans back in the stands for regular season games this year.
Well, it's going to be great to see fans tonight. I can't wait to get over there, man. First time for me, I think Dick as well. It's our first game in person since Felix's last game in 2019, September. So we're talking 18 months, for God's sakes, has gone by. But everyone's tried to do their job. I mean, obviously, you guys have to be maybe even as diligent, you know, more diligent than fans. You know, what have you done? What's life been like for you, knowing that you could pick this stupid thing up and give it to your teammates, and all of a sudden the whole thing's been shut down?
Yeah, you know, we got to play it really safe. Luckily, we have some really good protocols in place, and everyone's really being careful about it, doing the best they can. You know, we're wearing masks everywhere, and I'm really not going many places other than the ballpark. And you're just trying to get through this season and make sure that everyone stays healthy.
What's the vaccination schedule for you guys?
You know, we don't know yet. I think that it's coming. There's a chance that we're going to get vaccinated. I have the opportunity to get vaccinated pretty soon here, but I don't know the exact time schedule on that.
Well, I think baseball players, at least local ones, should get to skip ahead. That's my vote. So even ones that are 6'3" and above should even really get bumped up before everybody else. So we're hoping you guys all get shot up the way everybody else says. You go out there, you keep playing baseball. But listen, man, it's awesome to have you back. And before you go, I just want to ask you about the rest of this rotation. I mean, Chris Flexen, obviously, Justice Sheffield, Yusei still here, Marco yourself. But then you got all the hotshots down there in the minor leagues, man. And what'd you make of the kids you saw when you were in Peoria? Hancock, Gilbert, Kirby, the whole gang.
I had a great time in spring training talking to those guys. You know, I spent a lot of time with the young guys. Talked a lot with Gilbert. You know, he reminds me a lot of myself when I was a young pitcher. He's going to be great. You know, he's got such electric stuff and he's such a good kid. Can't wait for him to get up to the big leagues and start showing people what he can do. Other guys like Dunn and Marg, those guys are fantastic too. Really enjoyed working with them. And Sheffield also, you know, all these guys are great. And I really enjoyed working with them in spring training, you know, just telling them what I've learned and learning from them and their experiences. It's just everyone really just helps each other.
Well, James, final thing from me, and maybe the most important, I'm assuming we're going to have the Maple Grove back. So what have you heard about that, and what type of, you know, communication are you going to have on the mound with your minions out there?
Yeah, I've seen that they're, you know, they've had some T-shirts made and stuff. They've got their A cards ready. I heard some A's when I was pitching in spring training against the Brewers. There were some Grovers out there. So that was fun to hear those guys again. But yeah, they'll be out there as soon as they're allowed, I think, to be out there again. And, you know, can't wait to be able to point up at those guys and say hello.
You like the name Big Maple?
Yeah, you know, it works. I've had it for a long time. I think that, I think it's a good nickname.
Where did you first hear the nickname Big Maple?
Well, I forget what year it was, but Tim Bogar told me, he's like, hey, man, you need a nickname. And he said, I'm going to think about something. So he was thinking about it, and he said Big Maple. And I think he must have said it to Service, because Service dropped it in a interview, and then it just took off. And the fans took it, and the media took it, and all of a sudden I was Big Maple.
I love it.
You know, it just worked.
Well, as long as you're cool with it, we're cool with it, man. So if you're ever not cool with it, let us know. We'll stop using it. Big Maple, James Paxton, welcome back to town. Best of luck this year. Fired up to see you back, and go get him. We'll talk soon, man. Appreciate it.
Yep. Thanks, man.
Thanks, guys. Excited to be back.
You bet. James Paxton with us on the show. A lot more to get to as we are literally minutes away, just over an hour away from first pitch over at T-Mobile. Parks off the Indic, live from Jimmy's, continuing next right here on 950 KJ.
Happy tastes good.
Now back to Jimmy's on first for our opening day broadcast. It's Softy and Dick on Seattle Sports Radio 950 KJR.
So this is the jackpot theme. Old game show back in the 60s that Mel Allen ripped off for the opener to This Week in Baseball and became famous. Actually, Mel Allen was a lot more famous before that show started. It's funny how you see guys like that growing up as a kid, and you're just like, Mel Allen was a broadcaster for a team? Right. I thought he was the studio host for This Week in Baseball. Pat Summerall used to be a player. John Madden used to be a coach. What the hell are you talking about, man? So here we go. We're about an hour and 20 away from first pitch. The gates are open right now as we speak at T-Mobile Park. 9,000 people filing in. It's going to feel like a Kingdom game back in the 80s, man. I can't wait to get my ass in there.
It's going to feel like a T-Mobile Park game in 2019. That's what are you
true.
Talking about?
That's
why do you have to
true.
Go back 40 yeah. years? Yeah. I mean, this is yeah. exact. This is going to yeah. be a Tuesday night in 2019.
How many 9,000 people attendance did they have as far as like announcing 9,000 people in 2019?
They didn't, but that's not the point. The point is how many people are actually in the building, and there's a lot of games with 9,000.
If there's 9,000 people in the first inning and they're down 10-3 in the eighth, there might be 2,000 people in there. So I'm just like, I don't give a damn how many fans are in there, even how they play tonight. I'm just fired up to get my butt in there and watch some baseball in person. I'm fired up to go overspend at the concession stand. I'm fired up to pay $10 for a beer that at 7-Eleven would cost me $3. I'm fired up to pay 500 times what something's worth at Costco. And I put a poll out, by the way, not really a poll, I guess it is a poll, on Twitter earlier today, asking people, when you go and grab yourself a hot dog,
I'll get on the poll.
What is the first condiment that you start with. And I give you four options. Mm-hmm. Mustard, relish, ketchup, sauerkraut. All right? Maybe some folks would say mayonnaise. Some people in this town may say cream cheese because of a Seattle dog.
Right.
But I think, can we agree those are the four big ones?
Yeah,
the four basic ones. 2,000 votes in. Mustard leading the way. 54%, 35% ketchup, 5% relish, 5% sauerkraut. When did this thing start that you're soft if you put ketchup on a hot dog?
Well, it's only between 10 and 1 on 950.
No, a lot of guys think the same thing. So does
really?
That dude over there.
Really?
Yes. Absolutely. He thinks you're soft as hell if you put ketchup on a hot dog. I love ketchup. I don't care who knows it. I've never had bad ketchup ever in my life. It's like going to McDonald's. You ever go to a McDonald's and have a bad meal? We talked about this the other day. You ever go to Mickey D's and have a bad meal? It may be bad for you.
Yes, obviously, but you know what it's going
to
taste
but
like.
But you've never had a bad meal at McDonald's. You never go to Mickey D's and say, you know what? I'm taking this back. This tastes like crap. Never. I've never had bad ketchup. Ever.
Oh, I've had bad ketchup.
Is it old?
No, when you just get like Heinz forever.
Yeah, yeah.
And then you decide to go cheaper chicken one day at the store and put it on, you're like, dude, this is not, it's just soupy.
All right. Unless you're getting cheap, all right, and you're buying, you know, ketchup that you would see at like the cafeteria of a Motel 6 for the free breakfast they have
back
there. Ketchup is, I mean, what are we talking
ketchup
about?
Ketchup is
here?
The number one go-to.
Ketchup, mustard, relish, give me all three, always, every time.
I go heavy-ish on the ketchup, very light amount of mustard, because I don't want, the mustard can be overpowering if you put too much mustard on it, and then I dump some relish on it, because mustard and relish do mix quite nicely.
Yeah. I'm just saying, tonight there's not much I won't stick in my mouth. I gotta be totally honest with you.
All right, I'm
out
of here.
I might even try those dead bugs they serve, by the way. Has anybody here had the bugs? You ever had the bugs?
No.
Jackson, have you had the bugs? You love the bugs?
Oh, they actually taste good, actually.
See, this is the problem with these millennials. You know, they think that they're doing something. They're just supposed to be different.
They're doing something good.
Why don't you lick the sidewalk while you're at it? I mean, you know, come on. Eat bugs.
Man. How much money would you have
to eat? Why would you have to eat bugs when they've got hot dogs, beer, sushi, Kid Valley burgers?
I mean,
look,
too.
I can see it if you're starving and there's nothing else to eat.
It's the YOLO thing. No, it's the YOLO thing. I mean, the millennials are very YOLO. I mean, they're like, then they can tell their stories with their wine coolers and they can tell their buddies
that
they
had a
video. They make a video about it, how they ate a bug at T-Mobile.
I don't
Park.
Understand if you're standing in front of the concession stand, and to your left is the fried bugs, and to your right is the pizza place or Kid Valley or whatever. What in the hell in your brain would make you go towards the bugs?
Okay, first off, my dad was offering to pay for them, and second off, I just be able to say that I had them.
So, if your dad offered you to pay for a pile of crap, would you eat that too?
Here's $50. Eat this coat.
It wasn't there. It was sort of like, if you want to have it, I'll buy it for you. So
it wasn't a dare then, is what you're telling me.
Yeah, a little bit.
If it's a dare, I could see it. Your dad says, "Hey kid, here's $100 if you get those bugs." That's fine. But here's $5. You can spend it on Kid Valley or a freaking, cricket.
We would start there. You just named $100. That's where my price starts to eat a bug at T-Mobile Park.
It tastes okay.
Okay. You know what? I'm sure a lot of things taste okay. But why in the world, again, would you choose that over the thousands of other delicious, delectable food items they've got?
To say you did.
Plus I had a Kid Valley burger in my back pocket, so.
Mm-hmm. Like in your pocket?
Well, yeah,
literally,
not,
like,
not actually
like
I would
the
need
tots from Dynamite.
No. Listen,
Jackson, give me your burger.
I would need the biggest
milk.
I would need the biggest beer possible, and I would throw it down as quickly. I would chew it very, very maybe twice, and I would throw about 24 ounces of beer down my throat in about 20 seconds.
I don't know if I could even chew the damn thing, man. Just swallow the friggin' thing. I mean, that is just, God, that's disgusting. And people say, well, people eat bugs all the time. Yeah, because there's nothing else to eat.
Yeah.
They got no other choice. They have to eat bugs.
And they don't pay $10 for one.
Drink out of a dirty river and eat bugs and sleep on rocks because there's nothing else to do. They're screwed. You have an option. You don't need to do that. You are lucky enough and hashtag blessed where you do not in your life need to consume bugs to get your protein. My God. I don't get it, man.
They taste okay. They're spicy. They have a nice flavor to them.
They still have dingleberries over there?
Shishkaberries.
No, they have dingleberries.
Dingleberries are not what you think they are.
Okay, first of all, have you not been to the shishkaberry stand behind home plate?
Yeah.
They have four or five different options.
Oh, and one of them's called the dingleberry?
One of them is called a dingleberry.
Yeah, I now, can't eat
have,
that
they
either.
They may have changed that since we were last in there.
I think they should.
But one of the options was literally a dingleberry. So I think the guy that ran the shishkaberry stand doesn't know what a dingleberry means. And my question is, how does that make it out of the production meeting, right? How does that
yeah, this
it,
is a great idea.
How does it make it out of testing? You're telling me nobody in that room, it's like the same idiots that hired Booger and Joe for Monday night. Nobody in that room said, you know, we may want to take that one off the board. Torrey Hunter, former Twin Tiger Angel, is going to join us and talk some baseball. We are about an hour and 20 away from first pitch coming up on 950.
Sports Desk, your 950 KJR Sports Headlines.
All right, boys and girls, headlines on a gorgeous Thursday night right here on Softy and Dick, live from Jimmy's on First. Headlines brought to you, of course, by our friends at VenueKings.com.
We'll do it live!
The first lineup of the year is out for the M's against the Giants. Marco
Gonzalez
on the mound for the M's today, batting leadoff. Mitch Haniger, followed by Ty France hitting second. Kyler Gordon
is
hitting third for the M's.
Good
tonight.
Athlete.
Kyle Seager hitting third, followed by Evan White hitting cleanup. Taylor Trammell making his major league debut in the five hole. Dylan Moore, Jake Fraley, Tom Murphy back after missing all of 2020 behind the plate, hitting eighth. J.P. Crawford hitting ninth for the M's against the Giants, and Kevin Gausman tonight at 7:10.
Did you say Dylan Moore or Dylan Morris?
I think I said Dylan Morris.
Well, you got Kyler Gordon playing.
Thank you for correcting me on that, by the way. Know. That will not be the last time I'll do this. And I'll do it on purpose just to irritate the hell out of you.
Cardinals have restructured the contract of center Rodney Hudson, saves him about $7 million under the cap. The Bucks picking up a fifth-year option on former Husky Vita Vea for $7.6 million, and the Falcons signing defensive tackle Jonathan Bullard.
All right, let's get to it. Joining us right now on the radio show, courtesy of Bet Online. Check out Bet Online for the most recent win totals, futures, award odds for the upcoming Major League Baseball season. A former nemesis of the Mariners, a guy who used to crush the Mariners with the Angels, the Twins, the Tigers, had a long Major League Baseball career. Again, here courtesy of our friends at Bet Online, Torrey Hunter. Torrey, how are you, man?
Am I a nemesis? Really?
Yes, yes.
You man, smoked us, man.
You know what? Seattle was one of my, Safeco Field was one of my favorite places to play. I would tell people all over the country, man, whenever I play, they'd say, hey, well, what was your favorite stadium to play in? It was always Safeco. I think the Minnesota Twins, at the time they were trying to build a new stadium, they went out to look at the Safeco Field to kind of figure out how they wanted the stadium, because we all loved it so much. And I've had a couple opening days in Seattle, and it's pretty exciting, pretty fun. When that roof is open, it's awesome. Something that I really miss in baseball is playing in that stadium.
Well, that's exactly why you were a nemesis, because you loved hitting there. We don't like guys that like hitting at Safeco unless they play for the Mariners, for crying out loud. I'm looking at your lifetime average, by the way, at Safeco Field, and it was pretty good. I'll get you the exact numbers before you wrap it up here. I'm seeing your Kingdom numbers for some reason, but we'll get the Safeco numbers. But, Torrey, you know, I mean, look, man, if you were still playing, talk about kind of what tonight would mean to you. First-time fans are back in the park since September of 2019. It's been 18 months. What would that mean to you to look up for the first time in a year and a half and see actual fans in the stands, man?
Man, it would be awesome, man. I can only imagine playing 2020 season with no fans in the stands, because that's what lifts me up, you know. Even if I'm playing on the road and someone's saying, Torrey, you suck, or whatever it may be, I really like that too, because that pumps me up, you know. And just to see fans in the stands, I know these players are very appreciative. They really need it. They need that hometown cooking with that energy that the Seattle Mariners fans is going to bring today. So I definitely feel like I have to have that just to get that energy, that big energy that I need to get that big hit in those big moments.
Well, Torrey, I mean, this might surprise you, but the last time the Seattle Mariners made the playoffs, you hadn't even made an All-Star game yet, and you made multiple All-Star games your career. That's how long we have been waiting. So this, what is your level of confidence that what the Mariners have done, kind of Houston Astros-esque, just break the whole thing up and start over, is actually going to work?
Sometimes you do have to tear down to build up. And when you get an old home and it has bad flooring and mildew on the walls, you have to kind of remodel that thing. And it might take a couple months. In this case, it might take a couple years. And I definitely think that they're on the right track. Kyle Seager, I know he didn't have a really good spring, but this guy has a veteran presence for all those young guys. And Kyle Lewis and Taylor Trammell, I had him in the Futures game a couple years back. And this guy, you know, really hits the ball hard. He's a pretty exciting player. Kyle Lewis is very exciting. They had pretty good spring. So I definitely think that you just got to have someone like Kyle Seager, who's been around. He's the hometown guy. And we got to have those veterans around to kind of mold and raise these guys.
Yeah, Torrey Hunter, again, courtesy of betonline.net, is with us. And lifetime 814 OPS at Safeco. So you can stay retired, by the way. That's fine. That's fine by us. But you mentioned Kyle Lewis there, and a couple things I want to ask you about him. Number one, you mentioned having him in the Futures game, wins the Rookie of the Year last season, has a 954 OPS as a 25-year-old in his first year in baseball. And then you've always been pretty outspoken about how important it is to get African Americans more involved in this game, and you got a ton of them on this Mariner roster and one that just won the Rookie of the Year. What do you make of Kyle Lewis, Torrey?
Man, Kyle Lewis is – I had Taylor Trammell I had in the Futures game. Kyle, I didn't.
Got it.
But I watched these guys from definitely from afar, and I definitely think the Mariners are doing a great job of keeping African Americans on that field. You have a lot of athletic ability on the ball club, and Kyle Lewis is one of those guys, man. I love the way he plays the game, has some power, has the speed, and I think he has some confidence, which is within, not arrogance. Arrogance is without, but he has confidence and believes in his ability, his God-given ability. So you guys have a bright future with him. He's going to be fun to watch. One thing about Seattle, they've had some great African-American players come through there over the last 20 years, and one of them being Ken Griffey Jr. So I'm excited to be able to sit back and watch Kyle Lewis play.
A big issue, Torrey, in baseball, as you know right now, is this whole service time manipulation. You know, Chris Bryant, a few years ago, we had the Mariners, the now defunct Mariner president, come out and basically admit they were doing the same thing with Jared Kelenic this year and not going to bring him up and to protect service time. What's your take as a former player on the business maneuvers that franchises make surrounding players?
Man, they've been doing that. they've been doing that before me, and they did it a lot with me. You know, I was sent down because of service time, and so I can become a arbitration eligible the next year. You get sent down so that you won't be the free agent the year you're supposed to be a free agent. They just kind of manipulate it because they might have someone there on another year in the contract, and they have to. And I understand it, but at the same time, the players don't want that to happen. Yeah. That's been, the manipulation has been going on forever. It's just now getting exposed, and I'm kind of glad it's getting exposed because people can see through what you're trying to do. But sometimes it's just necessary because it's a business move. You have to do it.
Yeah, I would just say until the rule changes, Torrey, why should teams do anything different? I mean, if they can wait a month and a half and get an extra year with a guy under contract. I mean, until that rule changes, I'm not sure if I see the incentive for the teams to do anything differently.
Oh, yeah. It's been, like I said, this is baseball. That's the way it's been. Of course, free agency came after some sacrifices. You know, a lot of different things that happened after sacrifices. This is one of the things that, we still got to deal with collusion as well. There's some colluding out there as well that really you can't see it because it's not in writing, but you see it. And there's some colluding out there with owners saying don't sign this guy or different things like that. And there's some manipulation in service time as well. And it's going to get cleaned up. Something that's not that hasn't happened, and you know that hasn't not happened in the past. It's always happened, and I definitely think it's going to get better because it's being exposed now.
Torrey Hunter joining us here on 950 KJR. Torrey, you made headlines last year in June surrounding the death of George Floyd when you talked about the racism that you faced at Fenway Park there and said, hey, I wanted to be a Red Sox, but I didn't want to raise my kids around that environment. What has been accomplished in your mind, if anything, in the last year in the realm of social justice?
Man, it's definitely something that people have awareness now, and I'm not the only one that said that in Boston. It's happened all over the country, but it happened more in Boston than it should have, and it happened to a lot of other players other than just me. So I wasn't the only one that was talking, and I definitely think that Boston has done a lot to try to rectify the situation, to try to bring awareness, and they've done a great job. Sam Kennedy, I had a chance to talk to him, and he's made some strides as well. And it's just all about awareness and exposing it. If you see somebody doing that, shut them down. You know, shut them down. That's not right to say those things with other kids standing in the stands, and when they see that or they hear that, then they take on that. You know, and you don't want them to do that and go through life, you know, calling people names like that or just separating yourself from other people. So I definitely think Major League Baseball and Boston is actually making some strides and bringing awareness to it.
Well, I love how outspoken you are about that, Torrey, so keep that up for sure. But Torrey Hunter's with us, and a lot of cool things to keep an eye on in baseball this year, obviously. I'm curious, though, to get your thoughts, man, on Fernando Tatis Jr. has played 143 games in baseball, and the Padres just gave him $340 million guaranteed. Is that a better deal for San Diego or a better deal for Fernando? Because I guess if you're Fernando, you could roll the dice and maybe go for a bigger payday. What do you make of a guy that hasn't played 150 games getting $340 guaranteed?
Man, hats off to him. You know, that's amazing to get that done. My thinking and my thought of the whole situation is that the Padres say, hey, this guy is one of the best players in the country, in the world, and he's still young. Let's take away his youth and his growth because he's going to get better. He's going to get wiser. If he stays healthy, he's going to do greater things.
Yeah.
And they're taking away his younger years with that 10-year deal. It's a 10-year deal, right, or 8-year deal?
14-year deal, actually.
Oh, my God. Oh, yeah. My God. 14 years. They're going to keep him for his whole career. And he might, as he get older, he might slow down a little bit, but you're thinking and banking on him being wiser as well and a more of a complete player. So I definitely would say it's a lot of money, and I can't imagine that as a youngster, but I definitely think it works out for the Padres as well because they take away all his good years and his most expensive years.
Final thing from me, Torrey. Is that the biggest storyline, the Padres trying to compete with the Goliaths, the Yankees and the Dodgers? And why do so many people not want small market teams to compete with the big market teams?
Man, I mean, the Padres had to make those deals. They spent some money in the last 2 years, 3 years, of trying to build that team up out there in San Diego. And Dodgers is a team that's been pounding for years. They've been putting pieces of puzzles together for a long time. They have deep pockets, and Padres say, hey, we're tired of being second fiddle to the Dodgers, and we want to win now. And I think the Dodgers had something, somebody behind them, breathing that behind that down their necks, and these guys are going to give them a run for their money, because if they get any kind of momentum this year in San Diego, they're going to win that division. If they get some momentum, and you ride big momentum when it comes through your town, and you ride that thing as long as possible, if they can get 3 months of hotness, I definitely think they can get it done.
Torrey Hunter, great stuff. This was fun. Don't be a stranger. Hopefully we'll catch up during the baseball season. Best of luck with your guys over at betonline.net, who, by the way, have the M's over-under on wins at 71.5, and both Dick and I like the over on that for sure, so that'll be fun to follow. But great stuff, Torrey. Best of luck. Enjoy retirement. We'll talk down the road, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, guys, man. Have a good one.
You bet. Torrey Hunter, former Twin Angel Tiger who just murdered the Mariners back in the day and now doing some work for betonline.net. Dick, what do you say we keep it on the baseball wagon, though? We're going to break. Jerry DePoto, Mariner general manager. We're at Jimmy's. We're getting ready for opening night next on 950 KJ.